Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
The mystery of the $7 million Wells Fargo robbery in Connecticut 2 years ago apparently was partially solved today with the arrest of 13 people and a surprise disclosure.
On August 30th, 1985, more than 200 federal agents descended upon dozens of locations across Puerto Rico and the continental U.S.
The FBI raids began after dawn in San Juan and nearby cities. 11 people were rounded up in Puerto Rico. Another was arrested in Dallas, one more in Boston.
13 suspected members of Los Macheteros and their associates were arrested in connection to the Wells Fargo heist. Among them, Juan Zegarra, who learned of the indictment beforehand and fled to Mexico with his wife and kids. It didn't work. As Juan explains in the Last American Colony documentary, he was arrested on the same day at an airport in Dallas as he tried to sneak back into the United States.
This guy followed me, had a big cowboy hat and cowboy boots, you know, so it was pretty noticeable. And then all of a sudden I sense, you know, the guy with the cowboy boots here on one side, and there's three other people, one female and two other guys around me. And he said, you're under arrest for bank robbery.
Los Macheteros leader Filiberto Ojeda Rios was met with a starkly different approach. Around 6 in the morning, a team of FBI agents converged on the apartment Filiberto shared with his wife in Puerto Rico. FBI records claim he emerged from the top of his staircase and engaged in a shootout with federal agents, leaving one man permanently blind in one eye. When Filiberto was forcibly taken out of his home nearly an hour later, the FBI said he was holding a pistol in one hand and an Uzi in the other. Eventually, the embattled Macheteros leader surrendered and was taken into custody. Four fugitives were also named in the indictment, including Victor Herrera. The arrest would mark the start of a long and complex legal battle, one that dragged on for years and raised questions about the limits of federal law, Puerto Rico's sovereignty, and the powers the President of the United States could wield. Previously on White Eagle.
We did several role plays in motels, so there was going to be no question about him being able to immobilize the guy with the element of surprise and then take him down.
They buy a motorhome. They basically stuff it full of cash and they hide it. And they take Victor and they stuff him in a place behind the false wall.
What the money did was corrupt the Demacheteros. Some wanted to keep the money. They didn't want to send any more money to Cuba.
My name is M. William Phelps. I'm an investigative journalist and author of more than 40 true crime books. What you were about to hear is the true story of a heist, one that funded an international independence movement and sparked an investigation spanning nearly four decades. This is White Eagle. From the start, the legal battles involving the Macheteros and their associates were contentious. To this day, the Wells Fargo case is still considered one of the longest and most complicated legal cases in the history of federal court.
There was tremendous support and sympathy, or at least neutrality. So as a result, many of the big law firms in Hartford donated their lawyers to the Wells Fargo legal team.
Ronald Kuby is a criminal defense and civil rights attorney who's been practicing law for the better part of 40 years. In 1985, Ron was fresh out of law school and off to a promising start, working the Wells Fargo case and training under legendary civil rights attorney William Kunstler. Back then, Kunstler was considered one of the country's most famous lawyers, in large part because of his work representing controversial clients, such as members of the Black Panther Party, the Catonsville Nine, and the Chicago Seven. Kunstler and Kuby worked together for more than a decade, representing everyone from civil rights activists to members of the Gambino crime family. The pair became so well known, they also made an unofficial cameo in a certain 90s cult classic film.
At 1 hour, 41 minutes in the Big Lebowski, in the Malibu police station scene, as the dude is slammed across the desk, he utters the greatest words ever uttered in the history of cinema.
I want a fucking lawyer, man.
I want Bill Kunstler.
Or Ron Kuby.
If you can't tell already, Ron Kuby is a dynamic character. He has a long gray ponytail and easygoing demeanor. He loves to talk and is the kind of guy that will keep you on the phone for hours. He has a page on his legal website dedicated to his dogs, which he proudly refers to as his law dogs. But his resume speaks for itself. It would be unwise not to take Ron Kuby seriously.
Bill ended up representing Filiberto Ojeda Rios. I ended up representing Filiberto's lieutenant, if you will, Luis Alfredo Colon Osorio. You know, I think it was Warren Zevon who said, lawyers, guns, and money. And we had at least two out of the three. We had lawyers and we had money. And probably some people had guns too, but that wasn't a part of the legal defense. So we were prepared to fight the government. And the government was not prepared for a legal challenge.
It's important to note that Ron's comments are the recollections of a criminal defense attorney who argued on behalf of the Macheteros. But he provides unique and rare insight into what went on behind the scenes as those involved in the Wells Fargo heist went to trial. Ron says day one of court proceedings turned out to be nothing short of a circus.
We showed up to the most massive military-style presence I had ever seen in any case ever. You know, they had black-clad snipers on the rooftop. They had shooting positions taken up all around the courthouse. They put in brand-new concrete barriers to prevent suicide bombers. Everybody had an automatic rifle.
The Wells Fargo case was a big opportunity for federal prosecutors. For years, the FBI in Puerto Rico and prosecutors in the U.S. had been trying to prosecute Los Macheteros members for acts of pro-state violence. More often than not, they'd come up short. Even when the group took credit for an illegal event, agents had a hard time identifying those directly responsible. Just ask former FBI agent Bob Heibel, who spent years investigating Los Macheteros.
The FBI didn't have the capability to penetrate these organizations because they didn't have the sufficient bilingual agents to put in San Juan to do the job. They were going through the motions with this and leaving it all up to the police of Puerto Rico.
In many ways, the Wells Fargo robbery changed all that.
The Macheteros committing the Wells Fargo heist was one of the biggest mistakes they ever made. The reason is that in Puerto Rico, the legal system had been so penetrated by leftist attorneys that it was almost impossible to get a conviction on a perpetrator that you had caught in the act.
The FBI didn't catch the group in the act, but it did collect a mountain of circumstantial evidence, including hours of wiretapped conversations. It wasn't always easy to decipher what was said in the tapes, though. The Macheteros used a system of code names for nearly everything: people, places, operations. Here's Hartford Current reporter Ed Mahoney.
They always had crazy euphemisms for things like bank robberies or expropriations and that sort of thing.
Nearly every Macheteros associate had at least one, if not five, pseudonyms. One member went by the nickname Frank. Another was known as Jumbo. Filiberto was Greco. As for its clandestine activities, the Macheteros preferred animals for code names. La Gaviota, which translates to seagull, was the name for the Muniz air base bombing. El Chivo, Spanish for goat, was code for a plan to free and assassinate an incarcerated former Machetero who was suspected of being an informant. As for Aguila Blanca, turns out there was more to that code name. Questioned by the government, FBI agent Jose Rodriguez testified about it in court.
Now, during the course of your FBI electronic surveillance, were you able to determine where Aguila was?
Yes, ma'am.
And where is Aguila?
On July the 13th, 1984, in the vehicle of Filiberto Ojeda Rios, a conversation was intercepted. They were discussing Aguila and the fact that his female companion wishes to be with him. They mentioned that the female companion is on probation, and they state in this conversation that Cuba is an attraction for him. It's real because he has been there.
And who is Aguila?
Aguila is Victor Manuel Herrera.
In those wiretapped conversations, agents also learned the group was beginning to fracture. They'd hear members bickering about how to spend the money, when to take credit for the heist, or whether the Cubans took too much of the cash. The fighting got so bad at one point during the summer of 1984, the group had split into two factions, one of which included Juan Zagara and Filiberto Ojeda Rios. In one exchange, Filiberto can be heard discussing how he was actually voted out of the Macheteros Central Committee, the internal governing body that he helped found.
And the guy, who's a member of the Cuban intelligence service, the guy that makes the whole thing work is Ojeda. And they demoted him, you know, which is ridiculous because without him, there's no organization.
Basically, an organization famous for its meticulous planning and secretive structures had devolved into chaos. And the FBI? They took full advantage of the situation.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
You dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
The United States of America versus Victor Manuel Herrera et al. Was a legal slog. A long uphill battle with twists, turns, and a seemingly endless number of procedural delays. Take as an example this fact. The first hearing in the case took place on September 3, 1985. As for the actual trial, opening arguments didn't happen until 1988.
There was a massive quantity of evidence against the defendants in terms of sheer volume, not quality, but volume. And what I mean by that, there were thousands of hours of wiretap communications that had been intercepted over a period of years. There were 45 separate searches, so there were hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of pages of documents. So there was a massive quantity of evidence, but the government was amazingly sloppy. It didn't seem like any of them were preparing to process it in a way that would be usable at trial.
Kuby says even with the primary suspect nowhere to be found, there was still plenty to litigate. There were motions to have the trial moved to Puerto Rico, where almost all of the defendants lived and where defense attorneys said they were less likely to face bias. Those were denied. There were issues with the nature of the material seized from the defendants' homes. What was fair game under the warrant? What was personal? What was just the FBI grabbing anything and everything it could in case it might matter later?
They basically took everything. And some of it was just hysterically funny. Out of my client's home, I think they took a videotape called Jazzercise Your Thighs, which was an exercise video, like the Macheteros are going to squeeze America to death between their powerful knees. What possible evidence could this be? They took children's coloring books, and they took everything that made any reference to Puerto Rico. All the history and literature and books on or by or about Puerto Rico, all of the Puerto Rican flags, every scrap of anything that made reference to the thousands of year history about this place, everything was taken as evidence of terrorism.
Perhaps the biggest dilemma, though, was the issue of those wiretaps. The defense filed motions to throw a large portion of that evidence out, saying it had been improperly sealed and that in some cases, federal agents had listened to conversations without recording them, and then they lied about it.
The FBI was really, really, really good at collecting eavesdropping tapes and wiretapping and paying attention to the tapes and collecting intelligence information. they were really bad at adhering to the requirements of the wiretapping law, which meant that at the expiration of a particular warrant, the tapes had to be sealed within 30 days. What sealed actually means is exactly that. They are put in plastic bags. There is a seal put on them that contains the dates, the times, the particulars of the tape. You can't open the bag without breaking the seal. And the purpose is to maintain the integrity of the tapes for use at trial, and also to make sure the FBI isn't doing what we know they did, which is sharing these things with other people who have an interest in the Macheteros who might want to listen. And the government totally screwed that up.
A judge agreed. More than half of the wiretap tapes were deemed inadmissible. And the government's case against a number of Los Macheteros was split into two. The trial for half of the group, which included Filiberto Ojeda Rijos, was delayed while an appellate court reviewed the tapes. The trials for the other half moved forward. Filiberto was let out on bail after spending 32 months in jail.
Well, the question was, where is Filiberto going to go? So Richard Harvey, who at that time was serving as co-counsel to Kunstler, said, well, he can live with us. He can live with the lawyers up in Hartford in our law commune. What could be better than living with your lawyer, I ask you? And he did. He moved in. He's really happy to be out of prison. And he is just an amazing human being. I mean, first of all, he's a revolutionary to the marrow of his bones. He's a Puerto Rican patriot. But he can do other things. He can play the guitar. He can play the trumpet. He can do things around the house that need to be done that he was willing to do because Filiberto fundamentally was also a communist in the best sense of that word. He knew that he always had to contribute through his labor to everything and everywhere he was. And he knew that all labor had dignity. And so he'd cook. He'd cook for the house. And he was a fantastic cook, you know, making up rice and beans and mofongo and other Puerto Rican delicacies. For me, I recognized that this was a great man of Puerto Rico. I had no idea how great, and I had no idea ultimately that he would have a legacy as early as he did. But I knew that, you know, this is like Che Guevara, you know, grilling up a cheeseburger for me.
Filiberto remained in that Hartford law house for several months and then returned to Puerto Rico, where he cut off his ankle bracelet and jumped bail. More on that later. Like his mentor, Juan Zegarra spent over 2 years in jail before he was granted bail. Unlike his mentor, however, he stayed put. His case, along with four additional members of Los Macheteros, went to trial. The trial relied less heavily on wiretapped evidence, in part because federal prosecutors had flipped two witnesses. Kenneth Cox, a friend of Juan's who admitted to helping him acquire fake IDs, and Anna Gasson, Juan's former lover who laundered some of the stolen money.
Now, what did Mr. Zegarra relate to you at that time?
He related to me that a robbery happened in Hartford.
What did he say happened to the money?
The money went to Springfield in cars.
Did he tell you what happened to the money after it got to Springfield?
Nope.
Did Mr. Zegarra tell you what happened to Mr. Herrera?
Yes, he did.
What did he say happened to Mr. Herrera?
Well, one time he told me Mr. Herrera was taken on the night of the robbery from Hartford to Springfield on a motorcycle.
And what happened after that?
He told me he was taken to Boston, then to Mexico.
Defense attorneys railed at the use of Kenneth Cox as a witness, calling him, quote, an accomplice, an addict, a man with a criminal record who's being paid for his testimony and kept out of prison for his testimony. For what it's worth, all of the above was true. Cox was arrested 21 times in 25 years and actually went to the FBI about Wells Fargo the day after he was arrested on a shoplifting charge. Juan Zegarra's ex-mistress, Anna Gasson, was a far more compelling witness. Like Juan, she graduated from Harvard, where she studied biology. Her testimony went on for days and reads like a novel.
I would say there's two major reasons, which for me are part and parcel of the same thing, which is that I loved this man and respected the values that he shared with me.
It was that respect, which was also part of the reason why you loved him?
Most probably, yes. I don't know.
Anna Gasson was initially charged as an accomplice in the Wells Fargo case, but was granted immunity in exchange for her testimony, and for good reason. She claimed that Juan asked her to keep about $35,000 in a trunk under her bed, which she did. She said Juan also asked her to transport money across the U.S.-Mexico border, which she didn't.
Did Juan Zegarra ask you to become involved in this plan to transport money to Mexico?
Yes.
Would you tell us, please, what he wanted you to do?
Well, there was a couple that was supposed to drive the camping truck across, and he wanted the couple to be non-Hispanic, to be white.
By a couple, you mean a man and a woman?
Man and woman, yes. He had already had the man who was supposed to drive across, and there was a woman who was supposed to come from Puerto Rico to drive across, and she couldn't because of some health reasons or something.
What's more, Anna testified that Juan had admitted he was behind the Wells Fargo heist. She said he also asked her to deposit cash into her bank account and write checks to people in Puerto Rico, some of whom were later found to be aliases of Macheteros members. Then there was his own written account of Wells Fargo, a manuscript that Juan hoped would one day be turned into a screenplay.
You told us the purpose, as you understood it for the writing, was to be made into a movie.
It was going to be turned into a screenplay by someone else. So his objective was to write down what exactly had happened so that someone else who was a writer could then turn it into a screenplay. What I saw was his version, not the screenplay.
Lawyers for the defense called Juan's manuscript questionable, saying it was a work of fiction and that key details didn't line up. But the testimony, along with some of the wiretapped evidence, did the trick. On April 11, 1989, Juan Zegarra was convicted on 11 counts, including aiding and abetting a robbery and helping to transport stolen funds. He was sentenced to 65 years in prison. The other men received varying sentences. Two were found guilty of conspiracy, another of conspiracy and the transport of stolen money. The last was completely exonerated. Filiberto, who was still on the lam, was sentenced to 55 years in absentia.
Fundamentally, the Wells Fargo case was an attempt to criminalize the Puerto Rican armed struggle independence movement, but to do so in a place where there would not be so many sympathizers to that movement.
After the Wells Fargo verdicts, questions shifted from who was responsible and whether they'd be caught to a debate that has continued for the better part of 40 years. Were members of the Macheteros violent terrorists who robbed the bank? Or were they at war with an occupying force and within their rights under international law?
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
You dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
In most cases, a crime story usually ends with a trial and conviction. But this is unlike most cases. It's complex and politically charged. It's not simply about a robbery. And to truly understand the surprising fate that would befall a number of the Macheteros, including Victor, Juan, and Filiberto, we need to take a step back, several decades, in fact, and look at their efforts in the context of a larger movement, one of mass protests, clandestine organizations, and open rebellion in the halls of Congress.
Those movements date back to the moment of the Spanish-American War, when there were already folks who wanted to seek independence in the way that Cuba was seeking independence.
Dr. Yarimar Bonilla Ramos, who spoke in the last episode, is an expert in Caribbean politics. She also runs a center for Puerto Rican studies at Hunter College in New York.
That current was always sustained and always had important figures, most notably, of course, Pedro Albizu Campos.
Pedro Albizu Campos is often called the father of Puerto Rico's modern independence movement. He was born just a few years before the U.S. annexed the island and spent a majority of his life either fighting for independence or in prison for his efforts. Here's retired FBI agent Bob Heibel.
What happens is that a nationalist group is formed. It's called the Nationalist Party of Puerto Rico. Albizu Campos becomes the leader of that group. They're quite militant. They participate in elections in 1930. They're defeated, significantly defeated. From then on, they turn to violence.
Albizu Campos was a man of bold action. He led a strike on Puerto Rico's Light and Power Company for its alleged monopoly on the island. He was a Harvard-educated lawyer who represented sugarcane workers in a lawsuit against the sugar industry. In 1937, roughly 1 year into a 10-year prison sentence for a conspiracy to overthrow the U.S. government, peaceful protests by his nationalist party turned deadly.
The Ponce massacre is one of the clear examples of criminalization and state violence against the pro-independence movement.
That's University of Illinois professor Dr. Jose Attilas.
It took place in the context of the incarceration of Pedro Albizu Campos and all the leadership of the Nationalist Party. The new leadership of the party organized a demonstration, and the Puerto Rican state, and with the support of the U.S., denied the permit for this public demonstration in which, you know, it was just a political rally. And when they canceled the authorization to have that rally, the insular police, now the Puerto Rican police, just started shooting. And around 20 people died, around 100 were injured.
No one was arrested or formally held accountable for the Ponce massacre. By the time Albizu Campos was released from prison in 1947, tensions had started to boil over. People were angry about the ongoing police repression, as well as a controversial gag law. By October of 1950, thousands of pro-independence activists had had enough and staged revolts in towns and cities across Puerto Rico. In Washington, D.C., two men attempted to assassinate President Harry Truman in the name of independence. One of the men was killed, the other jailed, along with Albizu Campos and thousands of others. Then, 4 years later...
In Washington, D.C., ruthless, fanatic violence erupted in the halls of Congress. Three men and a woman, believed to be members of the Puerto Rican nationalist gang that in November 1950 attempted the assassination of President Truman, opened fire from the visitors' gallery of the House of Representatives.
The attack by Rafael Cancel, Irvin Flores, Andres Figueroa, and Lolita Lebron was deemed a continuation of the revolts. Five congressmen were wounded.
They were not intending to kill members of Congress, but they were aware of the possibility that they might die. So in that context, they were trying to get the international and the U.S. attention towards the case of Puerto Rico and what was happening in Puerto Rico with the repression and criminalization, but also with the process, a sham process of decolonization.
Lolita Lebron said, quote, "I did not come to kill anyone. I came to die for Puerto Rico." Like Albizu Campos, Lebron and her compatriots received lengthy prison sentences.
And these people become heroes to certain elements in Puerto Rico. And the result of this criminal activity, the Nationalist Party is prosecuted in court and its leaders go to prison.
Albizu Campos was released from prison in 1964 after being pardoned by Puerto Rico's governor. He died a year later from what many believe to be the effects of radiation poisoning.
The Nationalist Party, as a party, ceases to exist. However, the adherents of the Nationalist Party continue their activities relative to violent terrorist methods.
Bob Heibel says the nationalist movements of the 40s and 50s deeply inspired Filiberto Ojeda Rios. He idolized Albizu Campos and left his career as a musician with the intention of picking up where his predecessor had left off. Additionally, both he and Juan Segarra have said they believe that the group's violent conflict with the U.S. government is perfectly legal under international law, that they're not terrorists. They're fighting for self-determination. It's a point I raised with Dr. Attilis.
This is a really interesting question that international lawyers would debate for hours. In theory, they were in the right, right? We have the UN Resolution 151450 that recognizes the right of the people to self-determination. There is another UN resolutions, a series of resolutions that acknowledge the right of people under colonial condition to pursue the self-determination.
Here's Dr. Bonilla again.
I think it's hard to say how Puerto Ricans viewed Los Macheteros in a kind of homogenous way, because I think there were lots of different views about them. For some folks, they were kind of like boogeymen. They were, you know, bandits hidden in the mountains and shadowy figures. For others, they were heroes and celebrated.
Dr. Bonilla is too young to remember any of the group's more violent operations, but says she always understood that there were Puerto Ricans hidden away avoiding what she called the repression of the U.S. government.
The violence that I remembered was more the violence of surveillance, the carpeteo, the COINTELPRO politics, the FBI. Like, my memory of the independence movement is of a movement repressed, surveilled, and criminalized. And to me, that's the violence that I most fervently remember.
When I first heard about the Wells Fargo case as a 16-year-old, it didn't make much sense. Why would Victor Herrera steal money he couldn't keep? Even more puzzling, why would he agree to leave his family and live the rest of his life as a fugitive? Years later, as I've looked into the story myself, those questions have evolved into a different frame of thinking. reflecting on the facts of the case within a historical context, what the Macheteros were striving for at its core was really no different from what the forefathers of America did during the 18th century. Think about this. We had colonists fighting, robbing the British of arms and money, blowing things up, all in the name of independence. It's the same ideology. And while Juan Zagara has said that he knew there was a good chance they'd all end up, quote, in prison or dead, I don't believe for one minute he didn't think there was another potential outcome. Because in 1979, just a few years before Wells Fargo, then President Jimmy Carter did the unthinkable. He commuted the sentences of Lolita Lebron and three others, including Oscar Collazo, one of the men who attempted to assassinate President Truman. After his release, Collazo told NBC that decades later, he had zero regrets.
No remorse at all. Wow. Fighting for the freedom of the country, there is nothing to have remorse of.
I'm more committed than ever with every minute of my existence.
Ms. LeBron was asked if she would use violence again.
I will do what is necessary for the liberation of Puerto Rico.
You see, clemency was an option for the Macheteros. And they all knew this, especially if there was someone powerful enough who found their sentences unfair and believed that their initial fight was for a just cause. And as it turns out, there was someone.
I, William Jefferson Clinton, do solemnly swear.
Next time on White Eagle.
Today we're going to focus on the president's decision to offer clemency to members of a Puerto Rican terrorist group.
A presidential order ignites a firestorm in Congress. White Eagle is written and executive produced by me, M. William Phelps, and iHeart executive producer, Christina Everett. Additional writing by our supervising producer, Julia Weaver. Our associate producer and script supervisor is Darby Masters. Audio editing and mixing by Christian Bowman. Voice acting by Daniel Colon, Julia Weaver, and Abu Zafar. Our series theme, Forms Regal or Grand, is written by Aaron Kaufman. Thanks to Arlene Santana and Will Pearson at iHeartRadio. And a very special thank you to Northern Light Productions for allowing us to use clips from the documentary, The Last American Colony. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
You dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
With the best all-inclusive vacation deals to Mexico and the Caribbean, booking your getaway with Cheap Caribbean Vacations means you have more freedom to do your deal. Whether you want to enjoy snorkeling, endless margaritas and more, or simply soak up the sun and sand in a tropical paradise, Cheap Caribbean Vacations has your deal for that. Plan and book the exact getaway you want at exactly the right price for you by using our exclusive budget beach finder, or find a featured all-inclusive package to Ocean by H10 Hotels and do your deal at CheapCaribbean.com.